The springtime, it brings on the finals. The blossom is on the trees. The players are in the change rooms, getting injections in their cute little knees. Attendants are all at the turnstiles, letting people in one by one. Goal lumpies between the goalposts, and everyone's just full of fun. Flags are flying from up in the stands. There's streamers and hats and balloons. There's mums and kids and businessmen and mobs of drunken hoons. People walk with quicker step. There's magic in the air. See you out at Waverley. You're a mug if you don't get there. The birds fly round the MCG. They don't have to be told. They're all decked out in lion colours or some in brown and gold. The bees are buzzing round the flowers. They've been ranting round for a week. They seem to say, come on the bombers. But we know bees don't really speak. I love those footy finals. What an avant-garde idea. Whoever invented footy finals, get that man a beer.
Good morning and welcome to the Could Have Been Champions on ABC Local Radio. I'm Jeff Richardson. It's good morning to Torch McGee.
Yes, good morning, Richo, and to everyone out there.
It's good morning to Billy Baxter.
G'day, Richo, colleagues and listener.
And to Ian Cover.
Yes, hello, Richo, colleagues and footy fans.
And to Greg Champion. As we know, bees don't really speak.
Good morning, everybody.
And the springtime does bring on the finals, but what a rather rainy day it was last. And then going to the game, and still, how many did they get there?
87,533.
Yeah. So can we safely say that rain did not...
It didn't deter attendance.
It didn't dampen anything?
Nobody's enthusiasm.
I think the only thing that dampened the spirits was the last kick of the night.
Yeah.
For the Hawthorne fans.
But, of course, how quickly things change, because much as there was all those swings and the swings and the drama of last night, how about Thursday night?
I know. Well, I'll tell you now, and I'll tell you something for free. I thought today we might have a lot of free information passed on, and let's go early with it.
All right, and sensible football talk.
Yes, and I'll tell you, for all the avalanche of naysayers who are saying that,
those naysayers. They say nay a lot.
Now, I've left their names with Margaret Thatcher. All right?
They nay who they are.
Because we never find out who the naysayers are.
I'll tell you now. All those people that said, and there's millions of them, who said the bye between the last game and the first final will only last 1 year. I'll tell you, on the exposed form of the first two finals, it's here to stay.
Ooh. Why?
Because that's why you had two crackerjack games, because the blokes actually had been rested up and got the most fit players available to play at their best.
I am accusing you of having serious football talk.
Correct.
Well, I'm going to say,
but I did it for free.
I'm going to say nay to that because West Coast Eagles didn't prosper from the bye.
No. I'm accusing
made a good
you
game
of
it, though.
Being a mouthpiece for the AFL.
No, I'm not. I'm just.
You've changed.
Well, I'm just a casual observer.
I'd like to take a different tack.
Take a different tack.
Yeah, well, because a couple of years ago when the Swannies were in the finals and they had...
A couple of years ago the Swans were in the finals,
and
they
had about half their team missing with injury.
Yeah.
And then they went over to Perth and got flogged by Freo. Mm-hmm. And then you just accept and say, well, it's survival of the fittest. That's how footy works. That's how finals work.
No, it doesn't.
The team who are the fittest on the last day and play the best win. It's football Darwinism.
Well, I'm telling you. I'll continue my apologia for the AFL.
Mm-hmm.
You played football and think it's still 1967 and you're kicking your first goal and getting the train down to Glenfrey with a Gladstone bag. I'll tell you now, it's moved on to being the entertainment business.
Oh,
and the entertainment business can only be showcased at its best, as it was in the last two nights, by having the bye first.
Can I offer you something from free?
Yes.
It is the same as 1967 when Torch, with his Gladstone bag, actually took the footy home after kicking his first goal. You don't fall for the trap of playing injured players in finals.
Was that the Swans did?
That's what the Eagles did
on
Thursday night. They played two of them.
Oh, there's also some suggestion that the Dogs might have played a few injured ones, but they went well.
Well, I'm in the football Darwinism camp.
Yeah, good on you, mate.
Yeah, leave it like it was.
Yes.
I'm naysaying to your naysaying. I'm triple neighing back.
Well, I've got something to say, but I don't think you can afford it. So, I'm
say it. Come on, how much do you want? 20 bucks. Well, anyway, I'm just tipping that's what'll happen.
Well, for all those people who are dog supporters and wanted them to win the other night, that the buy worked beautifully for them, and they are the beneficiaries. Even though I believe the coach originally said that he wasn't in favour of the buy.
Was he? And I'll tell you the other reason why it's here to stay.
Why is that?
Because the Legends game telecast. Don't forget that the TV broadcaster has the occasional say in what might occur.
Notice that by a 3:20 start this afternoon.
Well, that's football Darwinism of another kind.
And the ratings for the Legends game, the E.J. Witten Legends game on the Friday, and the ratings for the women's match on the Saturday night have outstripped AFL matches during the course of the year. So they might be happy to have that on again.
Here's another thing that the huge benefit of the bye. Endless, pointless and meaningless speculation about
player
movements and trades. You can talk about it forever
with
no accountability.
Yeah, and we need more of that.
At last count, Jagger O'Meara was going to 13 o'clock.
Yeah. And add another one, Torch. No one will ever come knocking on your door to say you got it wrong.
But the talk got so strong, I expected Delidio to run out for Geelong last night.
And he would have been matched up against Tom Mitchell in the middle.
And look how popular it's proven with the public. It's more entertaining than the actual game.
Speaking of entertainment, did any of you chaps watch the game between Footscray and Melbourne on last Saturday night?
No, I was in the car listening to Grandstand calling it.
Magnificent. No wonder 700,000 people watched it. It was a magnificent game of football.
Yeah. I wanted to see it. I was at a function. Oh, I'm sorry to have missed that.
Gee, they're good.
Mm.
Plenty of positive
comments.
How did
Katie Brennan go?
Yeah. Katie Brennan went well. All our girls, there was one girl who was playing, was the only girl we haven't spoken to.
Yeah.
Ever. Mm.
Yeah.
Plenty of comments.
Remarkable.
Better to watch than the blokes. That was
as good to watch as the blokes.
Until last night. And Thursday night.
And played in the right spirit.
Did you find yourselves barracking for the Dogs on Thursday night?
There wasn't any need after 10 minutes. Their barracking was completely redundant. But how about last night? Speaking of player movements, if we had really modern player movements where you were allowed to change clubs halfway through the season, Hawthorn should have been allowed to bring Sam Lloyd onto the ground
to take that kick. That's right, yes. He would have been a designated kicker.
Yeah.
I want to know. I mean, I know that football is now absolutely just, overwhelmed with stats.
Mm.
But how long did it take them last night to come up with the fact that after Isaac Smith had missed the shot, that we were informed that his last 11 kicks for goal in finals have been goals? Now, if I'd have been sitting with you there last night, Bill, and you said, well, I'd ask you, how do you think the Hawks, what's their record like at the G? And you would have told me. And then I would have said, I wonder how he goes kicking goals here. You would have said, I don't know where to look, Covey. And next thing they said, his last 11 shots for goal in finals had been goal.
Well, that just confirms that the football god intervened.
But how many of those 11 were set shots?
I think they're on the run.
Yeah. How many of those 11 were taken almost at the arc?
Mm-hmm.
And the number might drop a little bit.
And how many of those 11 were taken after the siren?
Yeah, with six blokes on the mark.
and turning around and having a laugh with somebody before taking the shot.
I'd like to know what was said and that wry smile. Got this in the bag, mate. We're there.
We do this all the time. No, someone put it to me. I said, what was that smile about? Someone said, the umpire said something to him and he was responding and his mouth guard got a bit caught that looked like a smile.
Ah, right. Oh,
he wasn't really smiling at all.
He was actually
being dour.
Who told me that? They weren't a Geelong supporter.
Right.
Anyway, it was...
This is our social media question for the morning on the Facebook and Twitter. We want you to nominate your chosen player, past or present, who, if you could have brought them onto the field to take that kick last night, who would you have chosen?
I've already got one, and he did play for Hawthorn.
Well,
does it have to be a player?
You can get creative.
You can get creative, but
I reckon after the events of the week, Glenn Maxwell would be a chance.
Yes,
tell us who you would have got to take that kick if you were able to bring on a designated kicker. Go to the Twitter feed.
Yep.
And and send it through. The obvious one to start with is Sam Lloyd, who took that that shot after the siren to down the Swans. One of their few losses in the last 20 years, but they did actually lose that one.
Made up for it in the last game.
You can find our Twitter feed if you go to the Could Have Beens website, www.couldhavebeens.com.au. And when you go there, you'll also find a button that will click you through to grab some of the few remaining tickets for our show tomorrow at the Playhouse at the Arts Centre. The Could Have Been Champions are live tomorrow at 3 p.m. Sunday afternoon. Yeah. There are tickets remaining, and you can find them by clicking through from our website, couldhavebeens.com.au.
There are only a few dozen left, I believe.
The host broadcaster have anything to do with that timing, 3 p.m. on a Sunday afternoon?
Well, possibly. I can't say for certain to it. I got to say, last night, bearing in mind that we are performing at 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon at the Arts Centre, I had to limit my barracking last night.
Mm. Keep your voice.
Yeah, to keep the voice.
I've got to find one before tomorrow.
There were plenty of opportunities to lose it last night.
And whereabouts was your vantage point for the game?
I can't say. I can't.
What do you mean you can't?
Well, I was in a hyperbaric chamber, right, so that I could get my voice right for Sunday.
Behind glass,
or as Bobby Davis once called it, the hyperbolic chamber.
Yeah, well, that would be a better chamber.
And just back on that stuff about all the trade talk. Isn't that outlawed? You're not allowed to talk to players about joining clubs, or
of course it is, but that doesn't mean you're not allowed to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. But surely, if people are talking about it, there must be some smoke there.
But why? Why would you assume that something that was being talked about in the media was based on fact?
Well, what does the AFL investigative team do? Do they go around looking?
What,
drone facts?
holding blokes up against the wall and say, who told you this?
I think it's about time they got the Edward Woodward light globe on the go.
Just expose some of these people.
It's fantastic.
Isn't well, that's what you get.
That's what you get with these blokes.
You're with the Could Have Been Champions on ABC local radio. Yes.
Coming up on the show, Champs will do some songs shortly. Then we're going up to the Golden Rivers Footy League to talk to the president of Murrabit Footy Club. They've got the grand final up there today. Mm-hmm. The men in white today, we're going to talk to one of the flag-waving merchants, Colin Hood. Mm. And in the second hour of the program, this week in football, talking to Stephen Stretch, who played for Melbourne when they beat Sydney in another rare defeat by 10 goals a few years back. And then Roz Richards from the Western Bulldogs. We're having a chat to us as well in the second hour of the program. Should be fun. Talking to Country Footy, Andy and I had the pleasure of going up to Huntley last Saturday. Fun up there. Yeah. Huge crowd to watch the grand final of the Heathcote District League with North Bendigo triumphing over Lichfield Gunbower. We met Tina Prout, the secretary, put a photo up on the... on the social media.
Have to look.
Tina's son, Logan, captained the under-17s to the flag.
Oh,
so she had the cup there to show us. And then I was back up that way on Monday to the Loddon Valley presentation night, and Loddon Valley Footy and Netball Grand Finals on today at the place out the road, Pyramid Hill, where Mitty Ammo are playing Bridgewater.
And that's another good point about last week. I got so sick of people who said to me last week, oh, what do you think about no footy this weekend?
It was everywhere.
If footy was there were no AFL games, but there was footy everywhere last weekend.
Did amateurs win?
Yes, they did, Billy, quite comfortably against Motawarri.
It was a huge weekend of footy last weekend. What was the name of that special show you did last week?
Grassroots Footy.
The Grandstand Grassroots Footy Show. You got to sample it the length and breadth
of that. I got to see a bit of Sturt playing South.
Oh, that's Grassroots.
Yeah.
Who won that?
Sturt, after a very tight three quarters, Sturt pulled away in the last quarter.
Diamond Jim still going well for Sturt?
Diamond Jim kicked five and got the three votes. And that was in a qualifying final.
Peter Endersby kick any check sides, did he?
We lost Peter
in the last couple of weeks.
Was he a check side man, Peter, was he?
Yeah. Oh, they all were, oh, Sturt.
And just quickly on that, that's interesting. Up there at Huntley last Saturday, would have been, I don't know. Well, I spoke to a policeman. They always give you the crowd estimate. Never ask the VFA crowd estimator. He'll really bump it up.
And what did the policeman say?
Oh, they thought it was about 3,500 to 4,000. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was that many cars there. Mm. You know, and all the people that gathered around us and the people we ran into up there, didn't hear one of them saying, oh, they ought to get rid of the buy. It's not working. Because... You know, all they're worried about is the grassroots.
Well, there you have it. It is working. You're with the Kudamines. Back with Greg Songs right after this.
You're with the Kudamine champions, Jeff, Ian, Billy, Greg, and Torch.
Why, thank you, Unc. You are with us. It's the Kudamine champions on ABC Local Radio. This time is always song time, and the springtime has brought on the finals. Have the songs got a finals flavour, Greg?
Yes, and there's a lot of flavours in the songs today, Richo, and there's a few to get through, quite a few, but they're short. And so we've got to plough through. Mark McKenzie McHarg has written.
That's mm-hmm. a name to conjure.
Well, it is. As if McKenzie or McHarg aren't Scottish enough on their own.
That's right.
You've got a hyphenate.
The combine.
There was a TV sports reporter, Cameron McKenzie McHarg, and I think one of them might be an Olympic rower. Oh.
And this one's from Yakandanda.
Oh, good.
Both of them.
And he writes that the Yak under-14s are in the grand final.
Good for them.
And he's written a little tune.
They play the finals, of course, at...
Yes, Sandy Creek.
Yeah.
Well, here's the story, Cove.
Yeah.
So, it's the only league where we have a ground dedicated to finals only. In the back blocks of Sandy Creek, the ground was surplus after the amalgamation of Sandy Creek and Kiewa. Since then, every few years, a debate erupts locally, but not from me, about moving to the game into Wodonga because it would generate more money. This hoary old chestnut reared its ugly head recently, a couple of years back, and they thought, we'll fix this, and we turned up on a sunny spring morning at 8 a.m. to Sandy Creek, and the ground, our jaws dropped, the playing surface was like the MCG, complete with checkered look.
Mm. Wow. In fact, someone sent me a photo during the week of the ground showing the beautiful stripes and the checkered.
The cross-hatching.
It looks magnificent.
Is it artificial?
No. No one plays on it all year, so I thought it was just bring it up for the final.
Sandy Creek finals is a fine experience that you should come. The debate about where to play the game has now gone quiet.
Mm. And just quickly, old chestnuts.
Hoary old chestnuts.
Always.
There's only one kind.
There's no other chestnut.
Boys, the song Road to Gundagai gets a hammering. Yes. One more time for Yakandanda. From the top, lads. One, two, three.
There's a track winding back to a dairy farm at Yak along the Mitter Valley Road. Where the moo cows are lowing and Sandy Creek is flowing beneath a sunny sky.
Yakandanda versus the Guna in under 14.
Yes, the Yak boys are fancy to bring home the beans. Then we'll all go back home and milk moo cows all day long. Go Yakandanda kangaroos.
Then we'll all go back home and milk moo cows all day long. Go Yakandanda kangaroos. There we go. One. There's a few
Yakandanda
short ones.
Yakandanda and Thurgoona in the same line is not easy.
That's it.
That was a trick, wasn't it?
David Barter writes, I'm guessing summer wine has been linked to Stone's Green Ginger Wine this week. Mm. Well, no, it hasn't, David, until you did. Now, Greg Tuck, now Green Ginger Wine elicited a lot of listener comment.
Yes.
And Greg Tuck wrote, I was playing in the Halora Stres, playing what? For Halora Streslecki in the Ellen Bank League. It snowed after half time. The ground had been icy. We slipped and slid. The boundary line disappeared in a blanket of white. At three-quarter time, the coach takes us into the shed. There's a 44-gallon drum of burning logs.
I thought you were going to say a 44-gallon drum of green ginger wine.
That'll warm you up more than the logs.
We gathered round knowing full well that nil madanum in the rooms next door had no such luxury. In my second year at the club, I'd been accustomed to others having a beer and a fag at quarter-time huddles. On this day, someone offered to top each drink up with Stone's green ginger wine, saying this would fire everyone up. A few years earlier, having turned 17 at a post-HSC exam party, it had fired me up. It burns on the way down and burns on the way up again. I opted for the cordial. In the last quarter, well, the colour of recycled green ginger wine is hard to describe.
Thank you.
So, on that subject, boys, just join me for the chorus. Oh, here we go, lads, sorry. Drove into. Now, we have to explain, Cove. 2 weeks ago, Ian and I were in Timboon. I had a sore throat. I went to the pub. I had to resort to the old remedy from the rock band days, green ginger wine, and the publican told us a wonderful tale about having been burgled recently and they'd taken every bottle of grog and left the green ginger wine. Drove into Timboon with a big dose of man flu. Went to the hall while wondering, what can I do? There were no bar drinks, it was strictly BYO. So feeling poorly, to the pub I had to go. Now when this hits you, beer or wine is not what you do. Drambuie costs a lot, besides this was Timboon. Recalled a remedy back through the mist of time. This situation called for green ginger wine.
Green ginger wine.
There was one lonely bottle sitting on the shelf. No one was ever going to want it but myself. He sold it to me with his tale of burglary. They'd cleaned him out of grog and left one thing only.
Whoa, green ginger wine.
I said,
green ginger wine.
That's very funny.
Everybody likes that brass lick with the sort of sus 9 note in it, don't they?
Fantastic.
All right. So we're moving through.
Have we ordered some for backstage tomorrow? Is that in the rider?
We should take it out on the stage with us. Bottle each, actually. All right. Richard Evans.
Hello, Richard.
Reminded us of a song from 6 years ago, allegedly, and it's the Danny from Droop Street personal song. Lads.
Oh, well, he will have had a tough night Thursday.
Yes, that's right. That's what we're going to sing about, Richo. Bulldog song, lads. A 1, 2, 3, and
we are depressed. We're feeling blue. We've got one more week of pain to get through. We know we'll lose to Cats next week, and if we win, that's worse, 'cause we'll then get done when we succumb to the preliminary final curse.
And we'll then get done when we succumb to the preliminary curse.
Just a little addendum there needs
adjustment. Yeah. Take out Cats, insert Hawks.
I see. I see. That is a mistake there.
For some, the
I think it's showing its age.
I would have picked that up, but I didn't. No. Hey, Steve Dennis, he's put his hand right up for Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, he's put in some outstanding games.
Yeah, so rising star.
Right, yeah.
So Steve Dennis just had this one-line idea, and for our friends in women's football, and we have many, tune in while we just extol women's footy. Week
keep hearing about that women's footy. We can see how good it is to watch. Every time you watch that women's footy, it keeps going up another notch. Oh, chaps.
Those girls love playing footy.
Yeah,
that's just what they do. One of these days they're gonna take a specky over you.
Everybody's pumped about women's footy. Plenty like it just as much as men's. Everyone is talking up women's footy. So let's go see them women do their thing.
All those girls love playing footy.
Yeah,
that's just what they do. One of these days they're gonna take a specky over you.
Are you ready, boys? Here comes the specky.
Nancy got a bit of a run this morning.
Yeah.
And Lee.
And Lee.
I'm intrigued by the rhyming of men's with thing.
Yes.
Watching notched work for me. But
yeah.
But when you're Lee Hazelwood, you can do anything.
That's the rhyming scheme. A, B, K, Z. Thank you.
Very good. Actually, Andy and I ran into Susan Alberti yesterday, which was terrific.
She's terrific. Yeah. Did you see her on Australian Story?
Well, I said what a week she, 10 days she'd had. She'd had the Australian Story.
Yep.
The women's footy game last Saturday night, and then the Dogs on Thursday night.
Yeah, big week.
One more song for this segment, and I sent this in 1990.
Gosh, really?
Now, I've had a number of people asking for this lately.
Have you?
And it's time. Time to give it a little trot.
Very good.
Shot from the top, Andy. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Your mic's way up tonight. All right. Join in, lads. Two, three. Amazing days. How fleet of foot. How cleverly he plays. If I didn't follow Collingwood, I praise him anyway. Andy, have you got lots of rev? I used to be a heathen blind. Didn't love the black and the white. But the magpie angel spoke to me. And he looked like Malcolm Blythe. Amazing days he floats around. His feet do not touch it to the ground. I bless the day he came to stay. His magpie home he found. There is no other team on earth to rival Collingwood, and they shall reign forevermore. And if they don't, they should. Amazing days, how quick of hand, and everything he does is done with the utmost casualness, like he's not even trying.
George Jones says hello.
Well, that's been asked for 25 years, Richo. So there's a one reprise.
Beautiful.
And Collingwood supporters can't say that all your songs bag them.
No, but most.
That's reverential.
Most of them do.
Well, tomorrow at the Art Centre?
Different story.
In an hour's time, in the next hour of the program, who knows what you might get, because there will be more songs. But right now, with the Coulda-beens, it's time to go, Bush. We're going up to the Golden Rivers League, which spans both banks of the Murray. But roughly half the teams are in New South Wales, roughly half are in New South Wales. I think it goes 4 or 5, something like that. And they've got teams all the way down to under 14s in both footy and netball.
It's a strong comp, Richard.
It's terrific. And Ultima have been going extremely well. They've won the last two flags. But they're coming up against Murrabit in the grand final today, and Murrabit are also hosting the game. And the president of Murrabit, Rowan McCarro, joins us online now. Welcome to the Coulda-beens, Rowan.
Yeah, how you going, guys?
Yeah, good. Well, Ro.
Huge day for the club, hosting a grand final.
It certainly is. It's been an early start, but, yeah, it's a great atmosphere here today. So under-17s have just finished, and the Hay boys have just knocked off Ultima by a few points last few kicks of the day.
Ooh, now,
Ultima have been going very well. What, they won the last two or three in a row?
No, this is the under-17s.
But at the seniors, though.
Mate, they've played, so this will be their fourth grand final in a row.
Wow.
And they're going for number three. So.
And how have you gone against them this season, Rowan?
Well, it's been a tight tussle all the way through, guys, but we haven't quite been able to get over the top of them. I think we've played them 4 times so far this year.
Okay.
And, I think it's the greatest margin's been 16 points. So we lost the game during the year with a kick after the siren. That was pretty exciting. But we didn't quite get the chocolates on that day. So
perhaps today then, Ron.
Sorry, mate?
Perhaps today.
Yeah, we're hoping so, mate. We're very hoping so. We'll have to play our best football, but it should be a cracking game.
And why did they choose the Murrabit ground for the grand final?
Oh, well, I think it was decided about 6-8 weeks ago. And you have to tender for it. So stage, we hadn't actually started playing finals. So there was a fair chance that, anything could have happened. So
I'll just describe the Murrabit ground and the way it's presented for the grand final today, Rowan.
Yep. So we've had a little bit of rain during the week here. We've had about 16, 17 mil. The ground is in absolute perfect condition.
Wow.
It's a fairly big ground. That's a fraction probably a little bit bigger than MTG in lengthwise, but not width. Picturesque ground, covered, surrounded by gum trees, just a little bit off the Murray River, about a couple of k's. Many of your viewers probably know the Murrabit market very well. Biggest market outside metropolitan, I think.
Okay. And who curates the ground, Rowan?
We have a few gentlemen that look after it for us. We've got every club's got a stalwart.
Yes.
We've got a fellow by the name of Vince Maher, life member of the football club, and I'd be very surprised if he's not here every day just doing little bits and pieces.
And does Vince mark the boundary line in the centre square as well?
No, we have another gentleman that does all that. Vince likes to get on the tractor and keep the grass down. So.
Oh, has he got the checkerboard pattern, has he?
No, we got the circle. We go around.
that's good.
Yeah. So it's a fantastic atmosphere here today. We've got Ultima dominate a little bit. They're in the under-17s, under-14s and seniors. And Murrabit, we're lucky enough to have two senior sides in today, seniors and reserves.
And in the netball?
Netball, we've got under-14s in our side. I think they only went down by a couple of goals just shortly to Wandala. The girls obviously kicked away there in the last quarter. It's pretty tight, but yeah, and we've got A-grade netball is Nullarbor and Ultima, I believe.
Uh-huh.
And the Ultima girls are going for 6 in a row.
And so hosting the grand final, do you take the gate and all the proceeds at the canteen?
No. The gate goes to the league. So all finals gates go to the league. So just to help do their running of their league throughout the year and run into league and so on and so forth. So.
Well, Rowan, being the president, you've got a lot to do, but obviously as a club you decided, as well as running all the teams you've got a field in footy and netball, you also wanted to have responsibility for running the grand final. What tipped you into wanting to tender for it?
We're pretty central to our league, so we travel a fair distance. Our league consists of three sides in New South Wales, Warkul, Hay and Moorneen. And Murrumbidgee's fairly central to everybody. We go as far west as Nullarbor, out the other side of Quambatook. And I'm led to believe Nullarbor and Hay officially share the longest road trip in country football.
Mm.
Oh, I think it's 4 hours by bus.
Jeez. Oh, jeez.
That's a fair travel. They reckon it takes even longer to get home, of course.
Yeah. You mentioned War Cool, but they went into recess this year, didn't they?
Yeah. Unfortunately, the guys went into recess. Pretty tough out that way through lack of water, irrigation water over the years. But they're pretty confident that they're going to get some numbers and have another crack next year and come back.
So. Terrific.
Yeah, we're all crossing our fingers and hope that happens. So.
And who's coached you into the grand final, Rowan?
We're very lucky to have a local fella by the name of Nathan Henry. Went and did some teachers' college at Ballarat and played a bit of VFL footy for the Ballarat side down there in the VFL. And he's been a steward of the club. He's virtually played here other than when he was in Ballarat. So a local kid. Plays a centre forward, full forward. So.
Playing coach.
Yes, playing coach.
How long has he held the reins? Is this his first year?
This will be his third.
Right.
Third year. We've first time back in finals since 2011. So.
Okay.
That's terrific.
Does he get amongst the goals?
He does. He had a great start for the season. He missed the first couple of games with injury, but was second on the league goal kicking, on about 50 or 60, I think.
And look, I don't want to get ahead of yourselves, but if you are successful, well, you're at your rooms. You'll be able to celebrate there, I imagine.
Yeah, that's right. Good luck kicking them out, I suppose. We won't have to travel far.
No need for a four-hour bus trip.
No, that's exactly right.
And one final bit of advice, if you are successful, or whoever is successful, can they quickly get to the presentations after the game? We were up at Huntley last week for the Heathcote District League. And all the North Bendigo players were all embraced by their fans and everything, and were a bit tardy getting over to the back of the truck for the presentations. And a bloke on the back of the truck got on the mic and said, "North Bendigo, can you get over here for the presentations? We want to get them done before the rain comes."
Well, we won't have any rain here today. It's going to be a perfect day. So if anyone's looking to watch the game of football, this is the place to be.
Terrific.
That's terrific, Rowan. All roads lead to Murrumbidgee in the Golden Rivers Football Netball League today. And as we were saying last week, win, lose or draw, on grand final day, everyone's a winner. So it's a great day for everyone involved, but particularly your club, Rowan. Thanks for taking time out to talk to us.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
No worries. Rowan McKerrow, who's the president up there at Murrumbidgee, they're hosting the Golden Rivers Grand Final Day.
Have you got their colours up there on the screen, Mitchell?
They're the Blues.
Okay, they're the Blues?
Yeah.
Who's the red and with the white V? That looks nice.
Moolmeen.
Oh, it's Moolmeen.
Moolmeen wear like reverse Swans. South Melbourne. Yes, the red with the white V. Oh. Yeah.
Last Saturday we had the North Bendigo in the Bulldogs colours and Leechville Gunbower in the Essendon. It was like watching the Dogs play the Bombers. It was fantastic.
Well, those country jumpers that aren't AFL ones, that's right, even more attractive.
They're the ones you like. Which
reminds me, the Dogs won and beat the curse on Thursday night. Not only did they travel,
they wore the white jumper.
They wore the white jumper. Yeah.
Which sort of took the shine off a little bit.
Yeah, it did.
It wasn't the same. It wasn't perfect, but they can make it perfect next week. Now would be a good time to hit the phones if you want to join Kobe's quiz.
What's the number, Jeff?
1-300-222-774, Billy.
That number again.
1-300-222-774. You could call now and join Kobe's quiz, which will be just in a few minutes' time. But right now, we're rejoining a segment we've had regularly this season, where we talk to the men in white. And I think, look, it's not an exaggeration to say that we're about to be joined by perhaps the most famous goal umpire in the history of the game.
At one stage, he was the only goal umpire.
He was emblematic.
He worked both ends of the ground at once.
That's right. The little bloke with the big moustache umpired 311 games. Goal umpire Colin Hood joins the Coulda Beens online. Welcome to the show, Colin.
Good morning, fellas. How are we?
Yeah,
very well. And 311 games is a sensational record. When you first started out, I don't reckon you thought you'd be still going after that long.
Oh, no, look, you just want to do one game, to be honest. Then you do a few, or maybe 100. But certainly when you first started, you just want to be involved in the game and get a bit of support and get around and watch a few games. But just to be in there for so long and to get a few games, it's... It was great.
Now, Colin, when you started, was it still the white hat, white coat era?
Certainly was. Coming up from the Trove Valley back in those days in 88, still the white coat and white hats and everything else, collar and tie. So it's certainly changed on a great deal from then.
Did you have a tinge of regret about having to swap out of the collar and tie and the white coat and hat into the tracky dacks and the polo top?
I remember one training night, I might have been at a Waverley, and they told us, we're getting rid of the hats, we're going to Cats.
Mm.
And we had a vote on us, and all but one person wanted to keep the hats.
Thank you.
But certainly now, there's no way known would we want to keep the hats, the caps
of the go. Did they want to keep the collar and tie?
No.
Have you hung on to your old kit, have you, Colin?
There's probably a few hats in the walk-in robe there somewhere. They'd be pretty yellow by now, but they certainly haven't seen the light of day for many, many years. There are probably one or two coats hanging around there somewhere.
Mm. And it was mentioned in the introduction, of course, he did train 11 games, but it seemed to be every Friday night on the TV, you were always on the telly. Did you get lots of people recognising you and giving you a bit of a stir?
A lot of recognition, not so much a stir, but a chat or a nod or a wink, and you get pointed at and thinking, I might have done a few games there, but you sort of try to take a backward step and deny it or decline it and say, no, that must be somebody else, depending on how the performance goes on the night, of course.
And Colin, the performance on the day or on the night is something that's vastly underestimated by anyone who's never actually done it. It's only when you've held the goal umpire flags and everything happens so quickly. It's astonishingly difficult to do, isn't it?
Oh, look, for 80% of the quarter, you're standing there doing nothing, and so for 20% of the quarter, you've got to have something to do, and when you've got to do something, you've got to do it at 100% and 120 speed. It's really that hard and pretty quick these days, and it's never ending. It's more the concentration factor more than anything else than the physical factor. It's just having to concentrate because there's always something happening these days.
And happening at triple warp light speed. Suddenly something's happened and you go, what happened there? Then once it's happened and you've made your decision, one of the great parts of the art of the goal umpire is just waiting to give the signal. Now, in your time, who was the very best at milking it for as long as possible before finally giving the two or the one fingers?
One of the assistant coaches at the VFL, AFL now, Rod Davies, would like to milk a little bit. We all milked it a bit and go past the point base, put the big back benders in. I'm just at the local football now because we're doing a bit of coaching at Geelong these days, so I'm just at the Geelong District Colts Division 3 Grand Final. One bloke's just gone past the point post and had to remind him at half-time that it's probably not on these days. Just get the decision right. Let's not worry about what we used to do.
I suppose from the time you started, Colin, right up to now, there's still been a lot of people who reckon we should have four goal umpires. In your estimation, how do you think it would work to have four goal umpires?
I was involved with a couple of pre-season games where we did use a four goal umpire system, but I think it's more technology these days. I can't see a four goal umpire system working. I can certainly see more advancement in technology to more post cams and other angles or whatever's going to be available, and the quickness of technology will probably be more of a helpful than having two blokes down one end or two goal umpires down one end at any particular time.
It doesn't happen as often these days, Colin, but when you started, you must have had to involve yourself in a fracas here and there. Did you take many numbers?
Only reported one person in an AFL match.
Who was that?
Mr. Harvey from Essendon, for unduly rough play on Mr. Abbott from Geelong in 1993. Just happened to be that game with his Salmon's kick 10 and Abbott's kick 14.
Oh,
yes.
Right.
One report out of that day. It
was 21 goals to 19. You did a fair bit of flag waving that day, Cole.
You have to have that centre of attention, and that's all we wanted, just to get your your old mug on the face on the TV and just be involved with the game.
Yes. We're talking to Colin Hood, who umpired 311 games waving the twin white calicos.
And Colt, was it, there was a Brian Hood umpiring as well. Is that your brother?
He was, yes. He Brian was around for a few years as well. Done about 12 VFL senior games in those days.
Yeah.
But more heavily involved with the administration and the being secretary of the association and things of this nature.
And last night, Isaac Smith had the shot for goal at the end and missed. In your time standing between the sticks, was there a player you knew he was going to kick the goal and you could all mark it down in advance?
Tony Locker was always a pretty good one. And on the other extent, Matthew Richardson, you would be holding your head and looking for boundary umpires, looking for as much support as you can. It was all quite good fun, but you're thinking, oh, geez, where's this going to go?
And, Cole, as a little boy growing up, were you... standing between the fence posts of the front gate with a couple of wooden spoons and your dad's best white hankies tied to the end of them?
No, we probably spent a few weekends standing in the outer Wigan Oval or Western Oval at the time.
Oh, you're Bulldog, are you?
Well, we come from the Western Suburbs, so we spend a bit of time out there just to have a look, and that's where you get your involvement in it. You know, you're just starting at grassroots and working your way through and saying, well, geez, I'm a bit small, can't play, I haven't got the skill to do that, but want to be involved somehow, so umpiring's the next best thing.
I just asked that question about who was the best kick for goal, and you said Plugger was pretty good. Any of the players ever run into you?
I think John Longmire and Ted, Ironmonger nearly broke my foot one day standing on it. John Ironmonger, he was when you get all the big ruckmen in the goal square, you try to...
Look out.
Colin, did you ever officiate on a kick after the siren?
Oh, probably have. Nothing jumps out in mind, but there probably would have been one or two, you would think, but I can't remember of anything to that nature. The 100 players kicking for their 100th goal is always a bit of an interesting one, but... can't really remember after the siren, which nothing jumps out there with me on that one.
And grand finals, Colt?
Done 94, sat on the bench 95, 2000, and a couple of pre-season ones as well.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Goal umpiring is a wonderful part of Australian football, and you've been a very important part of it, Colin. Before I let you go, I've just got one last question. Do you bring your own flags?
Yes.
That's right. You're not going to trust them with anybody else. It's been wonderful talking to you this morning, Colin. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks very much, boys.
Colin Hood, yes. who umpired 311 games behind the goals.
I wonder if he ever rolled up without his flags.
Oh. Yeah, but you see, you'd want to be sure that you had them. That's what I suspected that. You'd want to bring your own flags.
He was a professional.
We're going to take a little breather here and then come back with Covey's Quiz, 1-300-222-774.
You're with the Could Have Been Champions.
Thanks, Unc. You are back with the Could Have Beens. Racing up to news time, we've got Covey's Quiz to fit in and a very full board of calls, Ian. Let's go.
Yes, thank you. And look, I was so tense and nervous and anxious last night. I had no time to do the quiz, but I happened to go to a function during the week where they had a quiz and I pinched it off the table. So, Jane from Anglesey's first. Hello, Jane.
Oh, good morning, Covey. Morning, boys.
Hello, Jane.
I'll see you at Coburg this afternoon when the Ogs play in the D Grade Grand Final. Against Old Mantonians. How many best and fairest did Paul Ruse win at Fitzroy? Was it three or five?
Five
is correct. I was going to give you four options, but we're running out of time, so I've cut it back to two. In which position was Paul Ruse named in Fitzroy's team of the century? Centre-half-back or half-back flank?
Centre-half-back.
That is correct. You get the idea that the function featured Paul Ruse. So, and good questions. Paul Ruse won the Fitzroy goal-kicking in 1990, even though he was named in their team of the century at centre-half-back. How many goals did he kick in 1990? Was it 39 or 49?
49.
49 is correct. I might start giving you three options here. In Sydney's 1996 Grand Final side, Paul Ruse was named at centre-half-back. Adam Huskus was on the other halfback. It was on one halfback flank. Who was named on the other halfback flank? Was it Mark Bayes, Brad Seymour, or Michael O'Loughlin?
Seymour.
Seymour is not correct.
Excellent.
He was in the back pocket.
Thanks for playing,
well done,
Jane.
Thank you. Here's our old mate Peppy in Port Fairy. Hello, Peppy.
Hello, boys. How are you?
Yeah, good.
You're still at the Wimmera Mail Times?
No, I'm not there anymore. I've been floating between Port Fairy and Melbourne again. So I'm out of the Wimmera, but it's good to see they're getting a bit of rain up there finally. So
okay. All right.
I do miss the joint, though.
Well, you could pop in here and give Andy a hand.
I could.
No, right.
You could do some mumbles for the outside football.
Yeah, that's a thought.
Andy's going to move on one day. He's getting along in the tooth. You're the man.
Now, Peppy. Yeah. Peppy, who was on the other half-back flank? Was it Mark Bayes or Michael O'Loughlin?
Mark Bayes.
Ha-ha, walked into a trap there. It's not Mark Bayes, believe it or not. Nice to talk to you, Peppy.
Yeah, good to hear from you, Peppy.
Thanks, guys.
See you, Pep.
Let's go to Phil in Garok.
Garok.
Garok. Where's Garok?
I'm between Snow and Donald.
Okay. Oh, well, I wonder Andy didn't put you on first.
Yeah, well, Sinan'd think they're the bee's knees since they've got a traffic light.
It's where the women are strong and the men are beautiful.
There you go. Can you confirm that Michael O'Loughlin was named on a halfback flank in 1996?
I thought it was Mark Sinotti.
No, I don't think he ever played at Sydney. Paul Roos joined Sydney in 1995 and immediately donned the number one jumper he'd worn at Fitzroy. Who wore it at Sydney the previous year? In other words, who did he take it over from? Was it Jamie Lawson, Peter Philandia, or Darren Kepler?
Darren.
No, I think Darren Kepler might have been number 11. Had two
one. Yeah, you can see how that could arise. Thanks, Phil.
Thanks, Phil. Oh, look, he's found one from Donald. Hello, Michael.
Hello, mate. How are you?
Good. How's things in Donald?
Very good. Very good today.
Do you know Andy?
No, I don't know Andy or... Have to catch up with him one day when he's up there.
Yeah, he's an old Donald boy.
Well, he's very old. Ooh. He's been gone a long time.
Hey, Michael.
Yeah, mate.
Paul Roos, he wore the number one jumper at Sydney. Did he take it over from Jamie Lawson or Peter Philandia?
Peter Philandia.
You'd be wrong there, too. Bad luck.
Thanks for playing, Michael.
I think the North Central Premier Final's being played today in Donald. Let's go to our old mate, Greggy in Carrum Downs. Hello, Greggy.
Good morning, boys.
Greg. Hey, Greg. Can you confirm Jamie Lawson?
Yeah, I think it was Jamie Lawson.
Yeah, well, he had to retire because he had that terrible broken leg.
Oh, it's dreadful.
In 1985, Paul Roos finished third in the Brownlow medal with 16 votes. The medal was won by Brad Hardy with 22. Who finished second with 21 votes? Was it Glenn Hawker, Justin Madden, or John Platten?
Glenn Hawker.
No.
Oh, that's not Greg. Right, Greg.
No.
Bad luck.
Bad luck. He had a good year there. He polled a few, but that wasn't the one. Oh, here comes the music. Quick, Daniel in Reservoir. Daniel. Daniel?
Platten. Johnny Platten.
No, it wasn't Johnny Platten. So it means that Zach in Callista. Zach.
Hello.
Was it Justin Madden?
Yes.
You're the winner.
Zach, stay on the line. You've won. You've got news to jump onto our social media question. Nominated player to take a kick after the siren. You might get read out after the news because we'll be back after the news.
I'll get Zach to kick it for me. I think he's gone back to back.
He has.
Zach.
He's kicked that one after the siren. Stay tuned. News coming up. We'll be back.